Live.
This is Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. It's our daily in-depth look at people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. Inside Douglas County is presented by Concrete Builders Supply. Now, Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Another candidate interview today while we are into the summer, and oftentimes less is going on politically. The governor's race still seems to be a hotbed of activity, and former state senator, now independent candidate for governor, Betsy Johnson, back on. Thanks for being on today.
Thank you for having me.
So overall, how do you feel like your campaign is doing right now?
I think we're rocking and rolling. There is ample evidence that an independent, non-affiliated with either of the two major parties candidate can win this. Our petitions are out in the field. We've got Betsy brigades lined up all over the state. We're starting to actually get petitions back in. We are energized. We're going to be at every parade, county fair. We were just laying out a very aggressive travel schedule. I mean, against the backdrop of only 18% of Oregonians think we're headed in the right direction, I think there's ample opportunity to break the vice grip of the two entrenched political parties and put an independent governor in charge who can be an honest referee and get us out of this rigged game of the two political parties dominating all of the conversation. And so we're building bipartisan support. I am probably the proudest of the fact that former Democrat Governor Ted Kulongowski and former Republican United States Senator Gordon Smith have both put aside their old allegiances and old loyalties and said, for the good of our beloved Oregon, we're going to join together and make common cause to recommend that Betsy Johnson be the next governor. Because only an independent governor, not a tool of the Republicans or a tool of the Democrats that represent the extremes, can help get our dear state back on the track.
And now talk,
so I'm excited.
Talk about the process. We're used to the regular primary general election process for the two major parties, but a lot of work is involved in this effort.
Oh, sure it is. Let's go back to the May primaries. Because Oregon has closed primaries, that means all the Democrats huddle up and they pick their candidate. And a lot of direction on who that candidate comes from sort of comes from headquarters. The Republicans do the same thing, although they had a very robust primary with 19 candidates. But that's all closed and that's all the party faithful. And also the taxpayers pay for that. So what we're doing right now is coming onto the ballot through the power of people's signatures, which I think is very symbolic, given that we are not beholden to the entrenched partisan extremes. It's Oregonians that put us on the ballot. We need about 25,000 signatures. We're going to get way more than that, so we've got plenty of shock absorber. And so what happens now is in the primary, the R's have picked their guy, the D's have picked their guy, and we're now out in the field asking Oregonians to pick me, and they are. And so the symbolism of coming onto the ballot through the power of people's signatures is just absolutely at the core of what we're doing. People can go to runbetsyrun.com. They can download petitions. They can watch a little video that explains how to sign the petitions, and we welcome their participation in putting a governor loyal only to the people onto the ballot in November.
I talked to a lot of people from both sides of the aisle and varying perspectives around Douglas County, and over the past several years, increasingly, I've heard from folks who have said they've been, and maybe they're in one party, they're thinking of switching to the other. They're kind of not happy with either one in some ways. But one of the things that seems to keep them in the party is not being able to participate in the primary. Now that we're past that, that changes the playing field for folks like that.
Yeah, I mean, it's what it boils down to is you don't have to leave your political party to vote for me. I don't care whether you voted for Biden or Trump or you wrote in your dog's name. But if you want a better Oregon, you now have a third choice on the November ballot. And I think a lot of people, disaffected R's and disaffected D's, who are just sick and tired of the fighting and the partisan gridlock and the using politics to just bludgeon the other guys and not fix Oregon's problem. People are sick of it. And we now give them a credible, a logical third choice. The extremes of the two parties are getting us nowhere fast. And I actually heard a very knowledgeable guy speak the other day who had talked to a United States senator who said, you know, it's easier to raise money and keep people upset and fomented if we don't solve problems. I'm done with that crap. We need to fix Oregon's problems. And I mean, for a person in government to say, I'd rather have the problem as an open, festering sore so that I can keep people in turmoil and raise money, to me is disgraceful. The premise of my campaign is I want to fix stuff and I want to fix the problems that are plaguing Oregon. And we offer that alternative in November.
The polling shows this race is fairly tight at the moment coming out of the primary. Do you expect it to stay that way and stay fairly close all the way through?
Yes, this is a historic race. It's historic for a variety of reasons. And besides, it's still early. We just started. One of the polls that's out in the field was done by a partisan lobbyist. And, you know, it is what it is. But I believe this is going to be a close race. And it'll be a close race all the way through. We're in it to win it, and we've got our teams in place. We've got our field in place. I think we've got a message that's going to resonate with Oregonians. And, yeah, it's going to stay close.
Let's talk about some of the core issues you're focused on, some things you would do differently if you were governor and they're headquartered in Salem.
Well, let's start with the one that is top of mind for just about everybody, and that's homelessness. I think all of us used to think of that as a Portland problem. We don't now. It's everywhere. It is in every community. We have got to get these tent cities taken down and get people into safe, stable housing. I think in urban areas, there are perhaps more choices than there are in rural areas. We've got to stop fighting about what's the best methodology. Do you shelter people first and then work on the underlying problems? Do you work on the underlying problems and then find the shelter? Are we putting the shelters in places that are acceptable to community standards? How are we making sure that people that have had a difficult time navigating for themselves have sort of helpers that will get them through the system wherever they are located? But after 40 years, we've had the same problem. The only way to change things is to bring an entirely new perspective to settle this issue, call the question, settle the issue, get the right people convened, have accountable standards, accountable people, and if they don't get the job done as agreed upon in a fixed period of time with adequate money, get new people. Our problem is not a shortage of money. We've got money in the system right now to do this. We got to execute. If we were housing people after a fire or a flood, there would be a sense of urgency. We're slipping into a place where there's more acceptance and sort of, you know, we walk by the tents now. If we get to a point where we are completely desensitized to the horror of the streets, we got a problem. So the day after the election, I'd pull together the people that I think would have a reasonable opinion about this and not a one-sided, lopsided table. I want public safety. I want drug experts. I want housing experts, public health. We just can't keep doing this. I think that Tina Kotek's approach to this is almost more Kate Brown than Kate Brown. We need new leadership, and we've got to make sure that we set the table with perspectives that are representative of fixing the problem, not just pushing a political agenda.
Do you feel like some of the ideas and some of the way you're approaching this sort of bridges this urban-rural divide?
Oh, without question. Without question. We've got to recognize that we need the best ideas from both parties. In my observation in the last years that I was in the legislature, too often the table is set representing a political perspective because the table is set by political leaders who want to be reinforced by whatever their ideology is. nothing would shake this debate up more and harder and faster than somebody to come in and say, let's get a bunch of different perspectives, and then let's set out achievable goals, achievable timelines, a sense of urgency. And just as I started to say about, you know, if this was a flood or a fire, we'd have this this sense of urgency to get people housed. I'm a governor that knows that there's Oregon south of Eugene and knows that there's Oregon east of Bend. And get those folks at the table. Everybody's got good ideas. The R's have got good ideas. The D's have got ideas. But let's stop setting these lopsided tables and just pushing political outcomes when what we really need is solution and to get people off of the horror of the streets.
Going to take a break, back with former state senator, now independent candidate for governor, Betsy Johnson, in just a moment on Inside Douglas County. The interview, a podcast after 1 at 541radio.com, 1246 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEM. Inside Douglas County, 1248, Lars Larson at 1. Umpqua Valley Live, part of KQEN Local Talk at 4. We'll be looking at arts, entertainment, community activities around the Umpqua Valley, so make sure and check that out just ahead of the weekend. Former state senator and independent candidate for governor, Betsy Johnson, on with us now. Looking around the nation in the primaries, in many cases, outsiders seem to be doing well in both parties this year. Now, you've got a long career in Oregon politics. Are you considered more of an insider, and how do you address that? And let's see if we, I think we lost her for a moment. We'll check again here.
I'm here.
Okay, very good. So talk about the aspect of outsiders doing so well this year, but yet your background makes some folks consider you an insider.
Well, let me dispute that premise. I started out as a Republican ages ago, and I left the Republicans because they just went too far to the right. I then became a Democrat, and I was always what one of my colleagues used to refer to jokingly, a BFD. And I used to think, yeah, same to you, buddy, until I figured out BFD stood for business-friendly Democrat. I have been a business-friendly Democrat for a long time. I've represented a lot of blue-collar guys that make their living in a natural resource economy. And so I broke with my party frequently on a lot of issues. Instead of fleeing the Capitol, stayed in the Capitol to fight with my own party on some that I thought were particularly bad bills for working folks. And so now what we're attempting to do is the ultimate outsider. Nothing is going to shake the system up worse than saying the Republicans and the Democrats, especially the Democrats, no longer have a vice grip on our body politic. And the fact that both sides are shooting at me now, they're coming after my record. They're coming after me personally. The fact that they're both cranky is an indication that I think I'm beginning to bother them, that there's a real possibility that they could end up with the ultimate outsider. An analogy that I've used previously is, have you ever seen a game where the referee belongs to one of the teams? You're not going to get a fair outcome that way. And I would submit that the ultimate outsider perspective is, I'm not riding for anybody's brand. I'm not an R. I'm not a D. I am informed by knowledge of the two parties, but I am the ultimate outsider and disruptor. And to speak more deeply to your question, when you said there are outsiders running in other places in the country, I believe that that is reflective of the fact that people are angry. They don't feel as though they're being listened to. They think the extremes are dominating the conversation on both ends of the spectrum, and they are. The extreme left that has gone way too far on lawlessness and disrespecting jobs and job creators and telling rural Oregon what to do, way too far, both of them. And I want to take that 80% in the middle that feels nobody's listening to us. They're just telling us what to do. I want to take that 80% in the middle and be their voice and their champion and have their back.
When we talked last time, you mentioned your long background in the state, but also getting to observe the legislature at a very young age. How did that shape your interest in being involved this way?
Oh, I came from a family where public service was practiced and valued. My father served in the legislature as a Republican representing Central Oregon. Those were during the McCall days, and that was my first exposure to the legislature, where the different parties could have principal debates on the floor and then all go down to some bar in Salem that's since burned down. And they all liked each other, they trusted each other, and they could do business. And they put forward some good policy. We remember those as sort of the glory days of the Oregon legislature. That's gone. And I want to bring us back. I want to find that maverick middle. I want to find our mojo. I want us to be proud of our place again. And we're just not.
How are you connecting with voters this summer? I know you have a lot of effort's got to go into the petitions at the front end.
Oh, yeah. I mean, well, we've got boots on the ground throughout the state. Eventually, we'll have a toehold in every county. Right now, we're putting that organization together. We're making tremendous headway. We are out and about having beers with Bessie. We're laying out a very aggressive travel schedule that's taking us to every corner of the state. If a governor doesn't understand that water issues aren't the same in the southern part of the state as they are up in the Umatilla Basin, I joke about a governor's got to know whether companies are making potato chips, wood chips, silicon chips, fish and chips, and we're going to be all over the state talking to Oregonians where they live and work and getting a clear understanding of what's on Oregonians' minds right now. You can't fix the problem unless you can define the problem, and the way I define the problem is out in the field talking to people.
You mentioned the homelessness issue earlier. What are some of the other big areas you'd focus on?
Well, lawlessness. Absolutely lawlessness. We have a breakdown of law and order. And I think Southern Oregon is as good as an example of any place I can think of. And while the proliferation of really criminal activity behind the marijuana industry, and I'm not saying that all the marijuana guys are bad, I'm not, but there has been, I think, arguably an influx of outside influence and outside interest. The fact that I think Josephine County is laying off public service people, police, it's incomprehensible to me. Especially because right now Tina Kotek wants to take away people's guns, wants to legalize drugs, wants to defund the police at the same time that we're letting criminals out of jail, wants to have tent cities. We're short police in Portland. We're laying police off in rural Oregon. And talking about defunding police in Portland, and then we wonder that we've got a lawlessness problem. I mean, it's just, I don't understand that. We need more police. We need to respect that as an honorable profession. We need to encourage people to go into public safety. But if we keep vilifying them and taking tools out of the toolbox of public safety to fight criminal elements, we're just screwing ourselves, and I stand proudly with police. We got to get a handle on the lawlessness. In the Portland metro area, we've got to have DAs that are willing to prosecute, not this catch-and-release philosophy. And Kate Brown has got to stop letting dangerous criminals out of our prisons under the heading of criminal justice reform.
And we're out of time on Inside Douglas County. How do people connect with your campaign?
They go to runbetsyrun.com, and they can learn all about the campaign. They can see speeches. They can find out how to download petitions. We'll give them instructions on how to get the petition signed. Runbetsyrun.com.
All right. Betsy Johnson, thanks for being on today.
Cool. Thank you. And I love that ad, Roars and S'mores. What a great ad.
1257 News Radio, 93.9 FM and 1240 KQEN.
You've been listening to Inside Douglas County on News Radio 1240 KQEN. A daily look at the people and issues that are shaping Douglas County. The show will be available as a podcast in just a few minutes at 541radio.com. So share it and let others who weren't listening live know about today's show. Inside Douglas County is a public affairs presentation of Brook Communications. Your home for Douglas County's news team. News Radio 1240 KQEN.